Welcome to the IP 360 podcast, brought to you by IP Private Wealth. This podcast talks about wealth, health, and all the different ways we measure our success. It's a true 360-degree look at how we manage our wealth. Today, we talk with Amy Friesen, CEO of Tea and Toast, and we're talking about retirement facilities, how to choose them, how to tell them apart, and how to make this life-changing decision for yourself or someone you love. Let's go to the interview. We're here today with Amy Friesen, founder and CEO of Tea and Toast, a retirement living advisory. Thank you, Amy, for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
So can you tell us a little bit more about what Tea and Toast is?
Sure. So Tea and Toast grew out of my love of working in the retirement living industry and working with seniors. And so after working in the industry for 9 years, there was a need for people to be able to navigate the whole industry, but not from a home perspective, out more from a community perspective, instead of going to a specific home and having their answers, really developing answers for the family and what they need, and then going to the homes to find them. So that's kind of what we do at Tea and Toast. We want to make sure that the home selection is based on our clients' needs and not necessarily because you found one home down the street that might or might not fit. And so most of what we do is problem solving for our clients.
What is the difference between a retirement home and a long-term care home? Because obviously we're all hearing a lot more of these terms lately, but not necessarily understanding what we're hearing.
Absolutely. It's one of the top questions we're asked as well, normally from our clients. And so a retirement home is what I call a cruise ship on land. And it's not because, you know, it's not super expensive the way that some people think, but more so it's geared to social. It's like thinking of a cruise ship. You're going there to be social, for good food, for that kind of thing. And then they also have care. And then a long-term care home is more like a hospital type setting. And so although there is social there, it's more geared towards care purposes. And so when people are thinking between retirement and long-term care, there's a lot of things they need to balance, right? There's a public and private sectors, which retirement homes are private sectors, and long-term care is public. So they need to balance a lot of different questions in each, including care and wait times and different things like that.
Are those two types of facilities ever combined? For instance, if there was like a couple, one of the couple needs retirement, the other needs the more of the long-term care sort of support. Are there facilities that offer both kinds?
No, not that I'm aware of. So there's just over 600 long-term care homes in Ontario. And I think there's around the same amount of retirement homes, and they're not combined because they're two different systems. And so in a position where a couple would be going in, most often you'll see the couples go into a retirement home because there's usually no waiting list. And so we would just gear to what types of care levels we need, and we would find a retirement home based on that. If one of the spouses then goes to long-term care, they go through the qualifying, make sure that they're on the list. They do the waiting list, which can be up to 8 or 10 years, depending. And they go through that. Once one is in long-term care, the other one can be qualified for spousal reunification, but it takes quite a long time. So most of our couples stay in retirement as long as they can.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense, actually. And so in terms of the retirement home, if you did need additional support for your care, what does that look like?
Sure. So the retirement homes where I am, right in Ottawa, they range from super independent all the way up to very extensive care. So you can get pretty much any type of care in retirement, but it is dependent on budget, right? So, you know, if you have the budget to do so, you could literally stay in a retirement home until, you know, end of days, and then and be happy there and whatnot and get all the care you need. And we could supplement it as well. You could always bring in personal care if you wanted to as well.
Okay, that makes sense. Can you elaborate a bit on the pricing differences in terms of when people are looking at retirement homes, long-term care homes, even possibly one retirement home versus another?
Sure. So I'll talk about long-term care first. So long-term care, the pricing is set by the Ministry of Long-Term Care. And so it goes up probably yearly. With COVID, it's a bit frozen at the moment, but, you know, generally speaking. And so that goes anywhere in pricing from around $1,800 to about $3,000, depending on if you're in a shared suite or a private. And that includes all of the care that someone would need, all of their hygiene products like incontinence and things like that. And then in the retirement home system, depending on what suite style you have and how much care. So if you're an independent client that of ours that is going in to a studio, you could start somewhere around 2,500 with no care, and then you could go up as per. So basically the top level of care, I would say you could be adding another $2,000 to your suite, to 2,500 or so, just depending. So the care differentiators are always how big the suite is, how many people are living in the suite, how much care you need, and how much care you need for the second occupant as well.
And I'm curious about that. Is the second occupant always a spouse, or could it be, say, sisters, best friends, situations like that?
Usually can be anybody. I've definitely moved more than just spouses and partners. We've moved fathers and sons. We've moved sisters. So it can be anyone. The second occupant cost is usually just to cover the meals and housekeeping and things like that. The base is usually around $800 a month. And then any care and things like that are on top of that.
And when you say a son, would that, or a daughter, for example, would that person have to be of a retirement age, or could they be younger and just sort of on living, you know, cooperatively with their parents?
It depends on the retirement home, to be honest. Not all retirement homes will do that, but there's definitely homes here that we've worked with. And most of it is that the child has been living with the parent, right? Usually it's something, some kind of like MS or early onset dementia or something like that. They're living with their parent and they're dependent on them. And so of late, you know, I had a couple with their son and the mom passed away. And so the dad and the son then needed to move into a retirement home. And so that's what we did for them. We've done that quite a few times.
Right. Can you give us an overview of how COVID is affecting retirement homes and long-term care homes right now?
Mm-hmm. It's a very tricky matter for sure. So in the media, everyone is talking about long-term cares and COVID. And of course, it cycles over to the retirement industry as well, because there's some common owners and things like that. So it's affecting it in numerous different ways. One, when people talk about outbreaks, people need to know the difference between long-term care and retirement home. That's one of the main problems. Two, when people talk about outbreaks, they see what's happening in the media in the long-term care homes and that all these people have died and there's all this infection rate and whatnot. And they equate that to any outbreak. But in the retirement homes, most of the outbreaks we've seen is one staff member who's then quarantined, and then the home needs to go into outbreak status for 2 weeks. So the home's not in outbreak, meaning the clients and the residents are not in outbreak. But because there's one staff member, they have to go through the whole testing and the 2 week period and everything like that. So it's been very, very confusing. And long-term care, it has been more residents and staff, of course. Like there's definitely more because they're sharing rooms in long-term care, because there's different standards in long-term care. We are seeing it more, but not always. That's the thing. It's not every outbreak in long-term care is actually a full building outbreak, right? So when we get clients that want to avoid those situations, we have to actually tell them in retirement, like most buildings at this point have had an outbreak, and it is what it is, but you have to look at what that outbreak looked like for that particular home.
Mm-hmm. Is it accurate, the sort of perception that the long-term care facilities, because they're government funded, might be less likely to, through COVID, to be coping well with the amount of demand on the staff, et cetera, versus like a retirement home might be, a private retirement home might be a little bit better equipped to handle the current situation?
I think that there's less red tape, perhaps. And so like everything that the long-term care homes do is all ministry, right? And it's all, you know, there's certain staffing levels and all that stuff. It seems to be a little bit more red tape. I'm not saying that they're taking care of it much better in retirement. In fact, there's, you know, a shortage of staff and whatnot as well. So it's really hard to answer that, because a lot of it is staffing, but it's because so many people are getting sick, because people are sharing rooms. And even going through this, everybody's been talking about updating the standards for long-term care, which is supposed to be updated by 2025, I believe, and now they've pushed it. And what's happened is, instead of having people in the quad rooms now, which was four to a room, they've eliminated those. So, you know, great for spread of the of COVID, but terrible for our system because it's 800 beds we don't have anymore. Mm-hmm. And so the other thing that's happening between COVID with retirement and long-term care is that the long-term care home system is so backed up because one, we've lost all these beds. In our area, they stopped accepting people except for crisis. So the waiting list has just been growing exponentially and nobody can get in. And then now there's an overflow in retirement. You know, there's always been lots of flow in retirement, but often people go to retirement, they're there for a while and then they go into long-term care if that's what their plan is. But now they can't get into long-term care. And so now the retirement homes are filling up too. And so after that happens, there's no space.
Right.
So it's just trying to navigate that issue coming up soon.
In terms of long-term care facilities, not all of them cater just to the to elderly or senior citizens as well, right? There's some that are for people with developmental delays, et cetera, et cetera. Are those entirely separate or are they combined?
They're combined. So long-term care is anybody 18 plus. So, you know, it's a tough industry because it is 18 plus and folks that have a variety of different things going on that needs that, they can go to long-term care, but again, you're still waiting at a waiting list, right? So yes, you can go, but the waiting list is still there. And then on the other end of that, retirement tries to only gear towards 65 plus, and then they make exceptions as per, right? So so oftentimes we get people that are kind of stuck in the middle.
Have you heard anything from residents on the experience of living only with other older people versus living with a variety of age groups?
I haven't heard too much. I think that, you know, I can speak to when I'm looking for a client that has that is a little bit younger. Like we are because of COVID, we've been dealing with a lot of more cognitive issues. And so we have a lot more of early onset dementia we're working with clients, and they're, you know, in their 50s and 70s, right? And so we're still trying to get them into retirement homes that are have a bit of a younger feel, but nothing specific, you know, actually kind of the opposite. We have, you know, 100-year-olds that say they don't want to, you know, live with old people. So so that's really where I hear it from, is that the older seniors saying, I don't want to live with all those old people.
That's awesome. In terms of what you were just saying, that COVID seems to be increasing the amount of people that you're working with that are younger, struggling with things like early onset dementia. What's the correlation there between COVID and that group of individuals?
Well, I think the correlation is the same kind of across the board. And it's the fact that there's been so much isolation that anybody that we were talking to before, or we, you know, met during, had some sort of something going on, but because of the isolation and because of the lack of exercise, the lack of extra social, the lack of family, these folks have just kind of been sitting there and nothing's been getting better. And in fact, it's just been going the opposite way. So, you know, in my opinion, the clients that we are serving now since COVID have been almost all cognitively impaired clients. We definitely work with, you know, a slew of different clients, but those have been our main clients. And that's a big problem because not only are there more clients that need memory care at this point, but there's no availability. Like I was saying before, the retirement homes are really, really low on memory care suites too.
That's interesting. And so, you know, I think there can be a perception that going into a retirement home or a long-term care facility can be seen as, you know, a real, like a bad news story, but for someone who might thrive off of structure and support and activities and doesn't have the right supports available on hand, it might even be a really positive change. Yes.
Yes, we see so many people that kind of, you know, kick and scream, as I say, and don't want to go. And they tell me, I'm going out feet first, right? And we work with so many people that don't want to move. And those people, you know, tend to move eventually. And usually they say it's like one of the best decisions and they wish they would have done it. And it's just, I think it's all born out of fear. And also, you know, the seniors that are moving now, you know, the kids are all for it because they see what a retirement home is. And they say, oh, you know, every time I used to tour them, when I worked in the homes, they would look and they said, oh, I'll live here, right? Because like all your meals are done, all your housekeeping, everything. But their parents are from a different generation where they saved all their money, where they saw their parents and grandparents going into the nursing home long-term care system. And, you know, people think we have problems now, but I mean, before it was probably a bit worse, right? Like it was, you know, they saw these facilities that have haunted them effectively. And so they've just equated everything to it and they don't want to go. So it's tricky. You have to maneuver around it, but most of them feel like it's been a really good decision.
Right. Have you been helping families move during COVID? And what's the difference between this time of history and say a year before?
We've been moving quite a lot of families during COVID. We took a bit of a dip in March, April. I think everybody, the world was just trying to figure out what was next. And it's interesting because out in the community, the appearances is, you know, how can you move people? You know, there's like all these because they don't understand long-term care and retirement, right? And, you know, that everybody should stay home. But the true factor is that they can't stay home. It's dangerous and they need to make a move. So we've actually had an increase of moves this year because people are getting into pickles. And so everything is similar to what it used to be, but now we have an added COVID test that they have to do. And they need to move to a retirement home within 24 hours of getting that test back negative, which does present some, you know, problems, right? If, especially if you're moving your furniture and trying to get all that done and in within that time frame. And then there's also a 2-week quarantine in the retirement home. So once you move, regardless if you have a negative test, you can only move if you have a negative test, you still have to quarantine for 2 weeks. And that's been really, really difficult, especially on folks moving with cognitive issues and specifically to the memory care floors that are the secured floors. They don't know better. They can't stay in to their suite to be quarantined. So that we've had to have families move in with them. We've had to have hired extra caregivers to help. It's been a bit of an interesting situation. So yeah, I think it's been a lot more stressful. The other thing that's happening now too is that all those people that should have moved last year and haven't moved on, like haven't moved yet because of COVID, they're trying to wait it out. The other thing we're seeing is that caregiver burnout is at an all-time high as far as I'm concerned. You know, as far as I'm concerned, everybody we talk to, you know, we have multiple clients that are just in tears by the time they get to us, and a lot of the daughters, right? So they're just, you know, they've basically done it for as long as they can do it, and they hit a breaking point. And then they started looking for a solution, which is kind of the opposite of what I try to teach people. You know, let's not wait until you're broke. Let's do it before. And so it's those two things, the cognitive issues and the caregiver burnout, that's really putting extra stress on the system too.
Hmm. Let's talk a bit more about that. So I don't think most of us would be surprised to hear that the caretaking responsibilities tend to fall heavily on the women of any family. And so can you kind of give us a bit of more information about what that burnout might look like, how someone might know if they're experiencing it?
Well, what we've seen, and, you know, to be honest, it's, you know, I've seen it in myself, right? I have a 3-year-old in daycare and I'm doing, you know, all the stuff we're doing. So it's not, you know, just for this demographic, but, you know, caregiver burnout, what we're experiencing from our clients is just that overwhelm of trying to balance, right? And so a lot of people are the sandwich generation. So they're taking care of their parents, but their kids are at home in some fashion, or they're taking care of them in some fashion. And so it's really trying to manage all of the kids stuff with the school being out and all of that, and working from home and the parents, but you can't get to the parents. So that's adding extra stress and frustration as well, because, you know, you're trying to protect everybody and be isolated, but then that is the problem as well. So mostly it's just pure exhaustion, to be honest. And like I said, a lot of our clients are in tears, just trying to figure it all out. And the other thing is too, is that they all mostly feel like they're alone, right? They've got other family members and they tell me, you know, I can't count on my brother. I can't count on my other sister out of town or whatnot. I'm it. And they feel this like immense responsibility, rightly so, most likely, that, you know, I got to fix the problem or the problem will be fixed. And I can relate to them, right? So, you know, it's really just taking it on their shoulders and then just kind of drowning in the information.
Mm-hmm. So, okay. So if we're looking at the situation, we're going, okay, it might be time either for me or for my mom, my dad, my mom and dad, to look at options. How does one begin their research?
Well, I usually tell people to have the conversation. So one of the steps I always say to do first is if you have siblings or family that's involved, other than, so let's say if you're looking for your parents and you've got siblings that are involved, a first step I think is a good way to start it is make sure that all the siblings are on the right page, on the same page as each other, so that you're not going to your parents with this, you know, idea, and then you've got a sibling that's ready to fight you on it, right? And so you want to kind of come to an agreement and a united front, and at least if it's somewhat united and you can maybe start looking into it or whatnot, then you can get the conversation rolling. But I also say, don't sneak in on your parents and just say, oh, we're doing this and we're talking about this when they're not prepared. You know, tell them, I'm going to come over, let's talk about this because I'm concerned, and let them know, you know, what's going on, why you're concerned, and what's kind of happening, and start that way. You know, otherwise, you know, for what I do for a living, you know, you can always work with an advisor to kind of help you narrow it down. That's, you know, that's what we do. And it saves lots of hours for our clients. But if you're going to do the research on your own, you could always start on the RHRA.ca website, which is the Retirement Homes Regulatory Authority. They have all the retirement homes on there. So you can sort by location, and you can kind of sort it out a little bit that way. And then it's really, you know, doing the grind, right? Really calling the homes and figuring out what kind of care levels you guys want and what your continuum is. So, you know, do your parents, like we were talking about before, do your parents want to stay there indefinitely? You know, or, you know, is a part of your care path going to the long-term care system, and what does that look like? So I'm a big proponent of really trying to set out a plan and then work from that plan, and then everything hopefully will start falling into piece. But the research takes, we usually say it takes 80 plus hours for our, if our clients weren't working with an advisor, not just us, but there's other advisors, but, you know, we can reduce it quite a bit. So a lot before COVID, a lot of people were doing the search on lunch breaks, after, you know, after dinner in the night. It's not unusual for me to get an email at 9 o'clock at night. I actually got an email at 12:30 a.m. on New Year's Day. So, you know what I mean? We get these emails because they don't have any other time. And it's just like, okay, well, I'm going to send an email because they don't expect me to be replying to them. And most times, you know, everybody has their phone on them, and I like to reply, and it, you know, it happens. I get a reply out within like 10 minutes sometimes, and they're shocked. Right. And it's like almost too scary because like now it's happening. Right. So it's just a matter of getting everybody on the same page and then kind of just working through the process, I think.
So can you talk to me a little bit about the Local Health Integration Network, or some people have heard the term LHIN, L-H-I-N, mm-hmm. and what exactly that the LHIN plays, what role do they play in this whole discussion?
So the LHIN is going to help folks who are either living, so they're living in the community, or they also help control the long-term care waiting lists. So two different spots. So if you're looking at the long-term care list, they are the ones that if you're going to apply, you're going to apply through the LHIN, they're going to qualify you, and they're going to help you through the entire process. They're going to set up your applications with you. You would pick your homes, you have a conversation with them, and you would go on the wait list. So they control that whole facet of it. And then if you're looking at what care can you get in the community, well, you can get care from the LHIN both in your home and in a retirement home. It just looks a little bit different. In your home, it's still a qualifying process, but in your home, it's more so homemaking, PSW, and then there's different services like social work and different things like that you have access to. And then in the retirement homes, most often we see people get care in the retirement homes to complement what the homes are offer. And sometimes our clients are making decisions for budgeting based on that, right? Because there's different homes that will reduce the rate based on whether you have LHIN care. And so if you're going in, the LHIN often, you know, what I normally see is about 15 hours a week. So usually come in the morning, help with the bath, get ready, and come in at night and help to get bed.
Yeah. And so I think the LHIN services probably sound like a good starting point for some people, but I'm assuming there's a waitlist qualification process. Is that complicated? Is it long?
Yeah, it can be long. So I always ask people to start with the LHIN because you never know what you qualify for. And especially if you're in your house still, let's get some care. Let's get some, you know, take care of yourself so that you can stay as safe as possible and not have to move if you don't want to move. But the qualifying process is a bit lengthy, and it's getting a little bit longer because of the long-term care backup, right? So like I said, they do control the waiting list for the nursing home. So once you qualify, you need to, it's kind of like a 5-step process. They qualify you on the phone, then they come to your home, and then they go through paperwork. And then when you finally get on the wait list for the nursing homes, especially in this area, you can be looking for, now with COVID and moving all the wait lists, you can probably look for anywhere from 2 years to maybe 11 years on a wait list waiting for long-term care. And that's why the retirement home industry is so big, because where are these people going to go get care while they're waiting for the long-term care beds to open? The waiting list for home services, I'm told, is not, you know, not nearly as long. But the one thing that is a bit confusing is that there's a LIN, like there's different aspects of the LIN. One is based in the community and one is based in the hospital. And so once you go to hospital, if you're in there past a certain amount of days, I believe it's about a week off the top of my head, then your LIN case file is closed in the community, and you open one in the hospital, and then they have to restart all the services and do all that. So it's a bit of a hiccup trying to move around the system. And, you know, that's why they have social workers in the hospital and LIN case workers. But that's something that people don't understand. And that's why I started, we're releasing a course in February called Roadmap to Long-Term Care in Ontario. And it's really 4 modules to really dive deep into each aspect of this. One module is completely on the LIN, the qualifying process, how to read waiting lists, how to, you know, how to navigate all that. It's very in depth. It's a complicated industry and system.
And that course is for individuals, families, people looking for their own care to go through?
Yes, the course is really tailored to families. It's built right out of our own experiences with Tientos, and just, I've been in this industry about 17 years. So it's, you know, all of these questions and all the things I address in the course are actually from my clients. And it's funny, in making it and starting to film it and whatnot, as I'm doing it, I'm always getting a call from a new client, and they're happening to ask me exactly what's happening in my course. For some reason, it's all just aligned that way. So it's interesting, because more often than not, I'm saying, oh, you know what? I just wrote that part of my course. And that's, so it's definitely top of mind for a lot of people, and it's really hard to sort out. So I'm hoping it'll help them.
And so we've talked about long-term care, retirement homes, the LIN, and the other term that came up today was the RHRA. So what is that, and how does it kind of interact with these other entities?
So it's separate. It's in the retirement home world. So it was introduced in 2010. And before that, the regulatory system for retirement homes was more of an opt-in system. And it was called ORCA. ORCA is still around, but you pay a membership, and it's your choice whether you are in this qualifying process or not. And so the RHRA came in, which is the Retirement Home Regulatory Authority, and it's overseen by government. And so it's a must. So any retirement home that has 10 plus beds and offers care needs to be authorized to provide the care, and needs to be legislated. And so they oversee the whole retirement industry, and they do inspections, much like the Ministry of Long-Term Health does in long-term care, the RHRA does for us in retirement. And then the rent portion for cost-wise is not overseen, but is governed by the Landlord-Tenant Act. So there's a couple of things kind of holding hands when you're in the retirement industry.
You wrote a book. Can you tell us a bit about that book?
Yeah, it's called Breadcrumbs, Piecing Together the Retirement Living Industry. And I released it last year, and it's really a book from my client stories, a book about kind of what we talked about earlier, like how to have the talk, what do I do, you know, siblings in, you know, that are not getting along, different things like that. So it really talks about questions and how to navigate in hard situations. There's a chapter on dementia care. It's, as far as I know, it's the only book available like it. And it's surprisingly, because it's the first book I've ever written, people have been really drawn to it, which is nice. Even, you know, past clients have said, you know, it's helped me know that this was the right decision, which is really heartwarming to me. So yeah, I've put it up on Amazon and you can kind of see it in the background there, but we did it in print as well, because my clients actually, it was an ebook and my clients wanted it to be in print too. So we developed it in print for them too.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, thank you so much for sharing your information with us today. Where can people find out more about Tea and Toast?
They can go to www.teaandtoast.ca.
Wonderful. Well, Amy Friesen, founder and CEO of Tea and Toast, thank you again for joining us today. I look forward to another talk with you soon. The next time we talk, I believe we're covering some talk around transitioning, getting used to the change from independent life into retirement home life.
Yep, absolutely. Looking forward to it.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the IP360 podcast. We look forward to talking with Amy again about elder care. If you'd like to reach out to us here, you can email us at comms@ipprivatewealth.com, COMMS, or head to ipprivatewealth.com for more info on the IP360 philosophy to wealth management. We'll see you next time. And now for the fine print. The guidance provided herein is for general information purposes only and is not intended to serve as advice for one specific situation. Viewers are encouraged to contact IP Financial Planning, Inc. for a private consultation.